All right, what's going on, everyone? Today we have a really special guest. We got the Honorable Leona Roberts. She's the chair of the Legislative Assembly of the Falkland Islands, as well as the director of the Falkland Islands Museum. So I guess when you're talking about the Falkland Islands, there's really no better person to speak to. Leona, how are you doing today? Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Very good. Thank you. Thanks for having us on.
Of course. So Leona, I guess my first question is, and I think a lot of people would be wondering, what is it like living on the Falkland Islands? What is it like there? What is it like living in a place that's just so remote?
Oh, it's fantastic, actually. I mean, it's not without its challenges, because you're right. You know, we're right down here at the bottom of the South Atlantic, about 8,500 miles away from the UK. We're a very self-sufficient little country. We've always had to be. We have very limited air links and sea links. So we really have to just kind of, you know, get on with it ourselves, which is very much part of our character as Falkland Islanders. But it's lovely. I mean, our population is just over 3,500. So very, very small. We kind of know everybody. It's really safe. It's very quiet. We are surrounded by the most glorious wildlife. It's a fantastic place to live, particularly if you're into nature and if you like that sort of sense of freedom. There's nowhere better. I'm biased, of course.
Yeah, of course. I'm just curious, you mentioned like wildlife. What's like, you know, if I was on the Falkland Islands, like what would I be able to see there as opposed to like anywhere else?
Oh, my goodness. Well, we have 5 species of penguin. So from the little rock hopper right up to the kings. We have something like 75-80% of the world's population of black-browed albatross. You can frequently see a whole range of species of whales, from orcas to sei whales, which are, you know, somewhat less known, humpbacks occasionally, incredible bird life, seals, oh gosh, honestly, everything. And, you know, it's really all very much on our doorstep. So, you know, here in the Legislative Assembly office, it's right down on the edge of the harbour. And we'll quite frequently look out the window and see dolphins going past and penguins cruising around. And there's seals that, well, last year we had a really interesting event where a couple of seals came up onto our front road, onto our main street, and decided to mate there. So that caused a bit of a traffic jam, which is something that's very unusual in the Falklands. But so it's all there. It's an absolute haven for wildlife.
That's incredible. I've actually always wanted to see penguins in real life instead of going to the zoo to see them in real life. So definitely making a compelling argument to come and visit. Now, I'm curious about your life story. What was it like particularly for you growing up in the Falkland Islands, and how did you sort of get involved in politics?
Okay, so I was born in Chile. My father was Chilean, but on my mum's side, I'm a sixth generation Falkland Islander, and our family arrived back in the very early stages of settlement in the 1840s. We came back here when I was 3, and yeah, I had a very ordinary childhood, very happy childhood, really. You know, growing up in this incredible freedom. You know, kids, even now, kids just are able to kind of roam around and do their thing. It's a bit, well, particularly then, it was a bit like the UK, and I'm sure America was in the sort of 50s and 60s. Yeah. You know, very very free and peaceful. I was 10 in 1982 when the islands were invaded, so that was a heck of a period. We were only occupied for 74 days, but it felt like a very, very long time. So it was a real pivotal sort of moment in my life. And I think I've always been interested in politics. I mean, you mentioned the museum. I ran the Museum and National Trust for 14 years. I don't anymore, because we are now full-time politicians. So I don't have, you know, I didn't go to college or university and study politics or anything like that. I came into it purely from being interested in making the absolute best we could of our little country. And I had views on a whole bunch of things, and it's kind of like, I'm not really someone to sit on the edge and complain. I thought, well, you know, there's an opportunity here, let's give it a go. So I was first elected 5 years ago. I've just started, we're a year into the into my second term. So we serve for 4 year term as an elected representative. And it's an incredible job, to be honest. It's a huge privilege, kind of stressful sometimes, but that's politics the world over, I think.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, there's a lot to unpack there, but I'm just curious. You mentioned that your family first moved, at least on your mother's side, to the Falkland Islands in the 1840s. What was sort of the reason, or like, were there any incentives? I know obviously back in the day, and like the U.S. people used to move to California, the Alaska, probably the gold rush or something like that. Was like a particular incentive, or they just decided to say, hey, let's pack our bags and move to this island in the middle of the Atlantic?
Well, there were literally people who did that, who, were proper sort of pioneering families, because there was nothing here. I think one of the really important things to understand about the Falklands is that, we had no indigenous population, so the islands were completely uninhabited. So setting up a community here was literally starting from scratch. My mum's family came down with the first British governor, Governor Moody. And however many greats ago, my ancestor was in the Royal Sappers and Miners, and he was able to bring his wife, and they had four children at the time, went on to have many more. And then, they kind of just settled, left the sort of forces, I guess, and just made their home here. But at that point, as I say, there was nothing. That was before Stanley, the capital, was founded. And it's hard to imagine. We're isolated now, but back then, it was complete and pure isolation. And people were, I think, were very brave in making those decisions. So that's how my family came to be here, and now have been here. As I say, I'm sixth generation. That's kind of complicated because I was born when my mum was actually in her mid-40s, but there are actually nine generations of my family on my mother's side here now. So we're a very well-established family.
Yeah, you are definitely Falkland Islands through and through. There's no doubt about that.
Oh yes, absolutely.
Now going back to your political career, what are sort of some of your roles? Like, what does the job entail for you?
Yep. So it's probably quite weird for people to imagine, because I mentioned the fact that we're a population of around 3,500 in an area that's actually quite large. It's about the size of Connecticut. So there are eight elected members, elected every 4 years, and we deal with everything from, the street light outside my house hasn't been working for a year, right up to big, national strategies and international politics and our sort of relationship with other countries. So we're a government that would probably normally be the sort of size of which would normally be managing, a village, dealing with, national and international strategy. So it's pretty full on. My particular role, in the last assembly, I should explain, actually, we don't have ministerial government as the UK does. So we have a portfolio system where each of the eight of us has an area of particular responsibility. In the last assembly, mine was public protection. So the police and customs and fire and all that sort of thing. And I was the COVID lead. Now in this assembly, I hold a portfolio for education and community, which is really nice, and deals with everything from sports to sort of charities, and we're all very much involved in every area. We just have those specific kind of focus bits where each MLA has a particular level of involvement, I guess you'd say.
Right, and I keep seeing MLA. What does that stand for? Is that Member of Legislative Assembly?
Oh, yes.
Okay,
Yes, member of the Legislative Assembly. Yes, sorry,
no
I'll slip
worries, because
into the
I
target occasionally.
no worries, because I keep seeing that. So just I was curious. Now I wanted to shift gears a little bit, and you kind of spoke about this during, I guess, your when you were talking about your childhood. So the Falkland Islands is, as an American, I really see it in the news cycle. But I did read that there was a war that lasted for about 10 weeks in the 80s. Would you be open to, talking about the war, possibly your memories of it, why did it start, its impact on the islands and the people there, and the current status of that dispute?
Yeah, yes, of course. Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think it's probably the one thing that people know about the Falklands. I think we are little known, but that generally most people know we had a war, we have penguins. That's largely about the extent of the knowledge of the Falklands. So yes, very happy to talk about it, of course.
Oh, sure. Care to share?
Oh, great. Sure. Yeah, sorry. So, yeah, where do you start with it, I guess? I mean, There's been a long-standing claim by Argentina over the Falklands. It sort of started in the 1800s, really, tailed off in the late 18, well, in, around sort of 1880. Then it was forgotten for many years, but it was kind of reinvigorated, I guess you'd say, by the Perón government in the 1940s. And from there on, there started being a huge amount of pressure on the Falklands from Argentina and on the UK to sort of transfer sovereignty or to give the islands over. So the Falkland Islanders have always resisted this. You know, this is our home. We're very British in our core. I mean, we do have our own particular identity, but that affiliation with Britain is very, very strong. So, you know, we resisted it completely. Through the sort of 1970s, late 60s, 70s, that pressure continued to ramp up. We had some sort of crazy things like token invasions where small aircraft were flown over from Argentina and somebody would hop out and hand out a piece of paper and wave a flag and fly off again. There were some really strange things going on. But the islands were being very much isolated, and we only were able to leave the Falklands by traveling through Argentina. There were all sorts of, you know, awful things around that. And then in 1982, they invaded. It's an absolute watershed moment for the Falklands. You know, we're small now, but back then we were a population of around 2,000, much less known, even more isolated than we are now. And so there was pressure building up through March, and then on the night of April the 1st, we were told our governor, who is the Queen's representative here, well, was the Queen's representative here, came on our local radio and said, you know, we've got credible information that there's an invasion fleet on the way and they will be here in the early hours of the morning. There was nowhere to go. There was nothing to do. So we had to just kind of hunker down in our homes and wait for it, which duly happened. Then they arrived here, invaded in the early hours of the morning. We had a small detachment of Royal Marines and our local Falkland Islands Defence Force who turned out and put up a really brave defence. But we were talking, you know, talking about 100 people trying to fend off literally thousands of invading troops. So there was never any hope they were going to be able to stop them. And then we were under occupation for 74 days. It was an incredibly difficult, horrible period for the Falklands. The British Prime Minister at the time, Margaret Thatcher, responded very quickly, and we had a task force sailing within a couple of days of the invasion. But of course, they had to sail, you know, to get everything together and sail 8,500 miles, and that took, you know, weeks for them to even reach here. And then over the next period after they landed, you know, there were many battles. Ships were lost. It was, I mean, it's awful. So 255 British servicemen died, over 700, we don't know the exact number, but over 700 Argentine troops, and three local women were killed in the bombing of Stanley in the latter stages. So it was an awful period. I mean, it's I have kind of mixed feelings in a way about my age, because I consider myself quite grateful in a way that, you know, at 10, I was old enough to understand what was going on. Old enough so that I remember it very, very clearly now, but I was also young enough that I wasn't half as scared as I should have been. You know, I'm a mum now, and the thought of going through that awful situation as a mother, I would have been just a complete wreck, to be perfectly
Of
honest.
course,
But
yeah.
as 10, you know, at 10, you're really quite optimistic about things. It was like, well, it's all going to be all right. And I mean, there were times where I did really come to accept that we would probably all die, but that was really in the last few days where things got really terrible. So it was a monumental event for the Falklands, and you know, very much lives with us even today, to be honest.
So how does it look with you guys today? What's like the current status of the dispute?
Well, unfortunately, it hasn't gone away. It's you know, the Argentina was you know, soundly defeated, but has never given up the claim, has never apologized for the invasion or for the things that happened. And they continue to pressure the Falklands, to be honest, and try and interfere with us, with our economy, with our society, with our links with other countries, particularly in the region. So that never goes away. We live in a weird cycle of we will have an Argentine government that's a little bit more moderate and that we can actually do some business with. So, for example, we share fish stocks with straddle both of our fishing zones. And in the past, we've been able to work together on data sharing to try and ensure the sustainability of our fisheries. That's really important, not just for us, not just for Argentina, but regionally and globally, to be honest. But they've withdrawn from that. We managed to get a second air link through Sao Paulo, which was, you know, important for us. But again, they've reneged on that agreement. And you see, so at the moment, that air link is not operational. We don't know when, if ever, that will happen again. But so we go through this cycle where there's a moderate government we can do business with, and then there'll be a more extreme government, such as the current administration, which is rather more rabid and very, very aggressive towards the Falklands. And so this is something that we just live with daily. But obviously last year, to sort of go back to the war, I guess last year was the 40th anniversary. And we had a year of commemorative events, of sort of, you know, it was in three parts, really. So there was the kind of, you know, the gratitude for the sacrifices that were made to restore our freedom in 1982. And we had a lot of veterans and next of kin come from the UK. So it was incredibly moving and really special for us. There was also a kind of, well, look how far we've come in 40 years, because the islands have progressed incredibly in that time. And then there was the sort of the third part was like looking forward, because, you know, we aren't anchored in 1982. It will always be part of who we are. But, you know, it's like we're ambitious. We've got lots of hopes and aspirations for the future. So that was really, you know, although 40 years on, it still is very present for all of us. And, you know, our veterans are incredibly important to us. And I think, yeah, I'm rattling on a bit, aren't I? But
no worries.
It's, there's something about there's something about having your country invaded that leaves an indelible scar on the soul, really, of a country, of a nation and its people. And it just doesn't go away. So while we are very much forward looking, at the same time, it's always there. It's always in the background.
So how does it manifest itself? You said it affects the people, obviously leaves an indelible scar. How does that manifest itself in the people of the Falkland Islands?
I think the overwhelming thing is this sense of gratitude to the British forces who, you know, who came all this way to liberate us. Most of them, many of them, would hardly have known anything about the Falklands. And, you know, for this tiny community, such a huge sacrifice was made. It was, you know, it's something we will be eternally grateful for. I think, though, as well, there's a lot of PTSD, or perhaps it's better described as kind of survivor guilt, in the community for the people who went through it. It's sort of easier for people of my age, because I was so young. I had a slightly different sort of perspective on things. But even so, it's something that, you know, I still feel personally. But I know that for older people, you know, it was incredibly traumatic. It was a really dark dark period, and that feeling of helplessness. You know, there was nothing that we could do from the moment we heard that we were about to be invaded to the end. There was, you know, we were so tiny, there was nothing we could do. So that's always there. And I think we have done our best in the 40 years. This, we say thank you all the time to our veterans and to the families who lost loved ones, you know, for our freedom. We thank them always. But it's like the only way you can, it's never enough, you know? So the only way you can really do that is by making our little country the best it can be. And so we've kind of forged ahead with a real determination to make sure that those sacrifices were not for nothing. you know, that when our veterans come back, that they can see how far the islands have come. They can see, you know, that the gift that they gave us is really evident to them. And so they know it wasn't for nothing. We've done the best we can with it. And so that's it's kind of a sense of duty, I think, that we have, just to make sure that we do the best with that opportunity.
Absolutely. And as an American, that sounds no, it makes perfect sense. And you know, as an American, it definitely sounds you know, very familiar. And when our veterans come back from overseas, no matter where you are on the political spectrum, we always thank them, always have we always appreciate their duty in keeping our country safe and so forth. Yeah. So we spoke about, obviously, Falkland Islands is a British territory. Argentina has territorial claims, whatever they are. Has there ever been, you know, any in 2013 to remain a British territory? How are these serious? Are these like actually serious? Like is it like a popular sentiment among Falkland Islanders for sovereignty, or is it kind of just like a not really anything to be taken seriously?
Any given week. So it is something that's very real to us. And the referendum 10 years ago, we're coming up to the anniversary next month. And it was actually born because Argentina sort of, they kind of cast about for different arguments. And at that time, back in 2012, 2013, they were essentially saying that Falkland Islanders were kind of being held almost against our will by the British government, that this wasn't something that we wanted, that this was, you know, the UK kind of, you know, being a colonial kind of oppressor. So I was like, well, you know, we can answer that. Let's have a referendum. Let's ask the question, do you want to stay, to maintain the link with the UK, remain as a British overseas territory? And we had an incredible response, which was no surprise, to be perfectly honest, but it was amazing. So there was 92% turnout, which is obviously massively high. And of that, 99.8 people said yes, which translates as three people voting no. So, you know, it was a pretty overwhelming response. There's no arguing with it. That referendum was overseen by a group of international observers, including from the US, Canada, and one from Argentina also, who, you know, were very clear that it was a free and fair vote. There was no pressure. There was no, you know, it was, you know, an honest vote. So, you know, that was really important for us. And the situation we're in is, you know, it's really quite bizarre in so many ways, because the UK government since 1982 has been really, really clear that their position is whatever the Falkland Islands wants. If we were asking to open up negotiations with Argentina, they would allow that. But you know, we've been very, very clear we don't want that. So you know, they continue to support our position very clearly. Argentina denies that Falkland Islanders exist. They will have nothing to do with us. They say we're an implanted population. We're not a real people. And when you think my family goes back 9 generations, which is longer than the majority of families in Argentina, it seems kind of crazy to me and really quite offensive that, you know, they deny us any voice. So they will never ever speak with us directly. Any work that's done has to be through the UK government. And it's just appalling. And, you know, our position is our right to self-determination is absolutely key. You know, that's a principle that's enshrined in the UN Charter. You know, that's the right of a people to determine their own political and social future is such a simple basic principle. And, you know, we argue that that should be extended to us, but Argentina argues that it shouldn't be and, you know, simply refuse. So it's a very real issue for us. I think as a small country, we're all very politically kind of aware, because this is something we see, you know, impacting our lives to varying degrees as the years go by. And even our young people, you know, we teach local history, obviously, in the schools. But there's no it's taught in a very sort of objective, just factual way. And we, leave our kids to make their own judgments. But the reality is that the behavior of the Argentine government just reinforces and just teaches, even like my 13-year-old daughter is very much of the view, well, you simply can't trust them, look what they do. So it's a very real, very ongoing thing. But to go back to the question about the referendum, yeah, absolutely fantastic event. We're going to kind of be celebrating the 10th anniversary of that with, just a little bit of sort of promotion stuff, because that position hasn't changed at all in 10 years. We're still absolutely confident and very clear about our desire to maintain our link with the UK.
Right. And I'm curious to ask, I know the three people voted no. I'm curious to like pick their brain and ask like why they voted that way when the overwhelming majority voted to continue being a British overseas territory. Now speaking of the people, I'm just curious. I've personally never met, actually you're the first person I ever spoke to from the Falkland Islands. What are sort of like Falkland people like, I guess? And I'm curious about the culture. Is it its own unique culture or is it mostly British?
It's such a good question because it's really hard to quantify and to sort of explain, because we are a young country, as I say, with no indigenous population. We don't have thousands or tens of thousands of years of to draw from as so many other countries do. So we're a young country. We're essentially all immigrants at some point, and at the core, we're very, very British. So if you were to walk around Stanley, you'll see red telephone boxes. Not that anybody uses telephone boxes, of course, these days anymore. We've all got mobile phones, but they're still there. And the red post boxes. There are, street names and things that are very, very British. Very, there's an overwhelming sense of sort of that Britishness that underlies everything. But on top of that, there's a really clear, distinct flavor that's very unique to the Falklands. So obviously, with our proximity to South America, we've always had families coming from South America, and my Chilean heritage, and Uruguayans, and yes, Argentinians as well in the past. So there's quite a lot of sort of South American flavor in there, extending even into things like some of our national dishes, are very Chilean, but adapted to the Falklands. But we also had quite a strong Scandinavian influence. So going right back to the early days, where there was sealing and whaling in the Southern Ocean, although not particularly close to the Falklands, we had quite a lot of Scandinavian and Nova Scotian sailors who kind of either jumped ship, met a local girl, ended up settling in the Falklands. So that's kind of come in too. So this like little melting pot of different flavors that comes to something quite unique and interesting, I think. And these days, we've got, this population of around 3,500. Our last census showed about 80 nationalities in that mixing pot. We're quite multicultural, quite diverse. I think a very accepting sort of society, which is lovely. These days, well, I should say a very large chunk of our population, about 8% of our population, has Chilean heritage, like mine. There's another lesser known British Overseas Territory called St Helena that we've had really strong links with up off the coast of Africa. And there's again about 8 or 9% of the population has some St Helenian heritage. But these days we've seen newer groups sort of coming to the island. So now we've got a really growing Filipino community, and perhaps most bizarrely in a way, because it doesn't look like a natural move, but we have quite a large Zimbabwean population. And that stems from, yeah, I know, right?
Very, very random.
It's like Zimbabwe to Falklands. It's not a natural move. But that's come from in 1982, the Argentines laid tens of thousands of landmines around the Falklands. And about 15 years ago, the UK signed up to the Ottawa Convention, which basically meant it would commit to clearing landmines. And getting rid of these minefields. And so a lot of the deminers were from Zimbabwe. And so they came to the Falklands. Somehow, despite our madly different climate. Kind of fell in love with the place, and when the demining project came to an end, decided to stay, moved their families here, and so that population is really growing too. So it's absolutely lovely. It's for a very small place, it feels quite diverse and
I was going
multicultural.
to say for a tiny island in the Atlantic off the coast of South America, it's more diverse than I ever thought. Now you refer to the Falkland Islands
Yeah.
as now you refer to the Falkland Islands as I guess throughout this interview as it's pretty much like its own country. What's like the degree of autonomy that they have, and would you consider yourself and would most people consider themselves Falklands first as opposed to British, or do I have that wrong? Like, what's your identity?
No, you're absolutely right. So that sort of, we're very proud of being of our British link, and but absolutely, I think we consider ourselves Falkland Islanders. First, British second. Yeah, British. So but yeah, Falkland Islander, absolutely. And in terms of sort of governance and autonomy, it's a That's us originally, as were so many other countries, of course, but particularly post-war, that is something that has changed. And so we're very much now internally self-governing. The British government still deals with our defence. Defence is something that we could, we're so small, we could never provide for our own defence. And has a role in sort of international diplomacy and foreign affairs, but we work very closely alongside them on that. So internally self-governing British Overseas Territory in the same way that some of the Caribbean overseas territories are, all other OTs, and it's a sort of evolution. It's a journey. So we're undertaking a constitutional review at the moment because we do have our own constitution. And there's always, I think independence is probably, I'd reach for the Falklands for a very, very long time because we're so small, and particularly when you have a very hostile neighbor as we do, I think we would be in trouble very, very quickly. But the British government is committed to extending, sort of devolved powers to the greatest extent possible to the OTs. And that's something that we continue to push for, and we work very hard to do. So we set our own, we pass our own laws, we have our own budget. We take no money from the British government. We're financially self-sufficient, and that's something again that we've worked really hard to do and we're very proud of. So we're a very long way from a colony these days. The link is there with the UK, and it's very much, I guess you'd say, a sort of mutually beneficial partnership now. We work closely together, but there's none of that kind of colonial spirit that perhaps used to be around 50, 60 years ago. So it's a really positive thing. We do have a governor here. Our first female governor actually arrived last year, and so that is the Crown's representative, but has very little involvement. Sort of at a operational level. It's really to kind of maintain some oversight to make sure there's good governance and that we're not corrupt, we're not running off doing something that would be madly damaging to to the British family generally.
No, like just in terms of, like the people, I think I asked this before, but you cut out on the internet, so I'm not really sure if you answered it. But in terms of like the identity of the Falkland Islands people, would you say it's more their own identity or it's mainly British? You might have covered it, just I'm not 100% sure if the internet kind of cut out.
Yeah, no. Okay, so I think very, very British at the core, but there's very definitely a particular unique Falkland Islands sort of cultural identity, and that's something we're really proud of. It is hard to define, but it's something about kind of resilience, about a very, yeah, we're kind of hardworking, hard playing, and. Yeah, I don't know. I think you have to come to the Falklands and see it for yourself. So you must make the effort. So it's well worth it to kind of understand. It's the only way, really.
Yeah, I was actually just about to ask that. Like, obviously, like one day, hopefully down the line, I'll be able to visit. But in terms of like tourism, what is that sort of like? Is there any incentive for the government that they offer people to come like settle there and visit? Like, and how many visitors does the Falkland Islands get annually?
So in terms of sort of settling in the islands, our population is growing steadily at about 2 to 3% year on year. But it's managed growth because obviously population this size, we have one hospital, you know, we have, you know, we only have this sort of infant and junior school and our community school. So basically all our, there are limitations on what we can offer. So so we have to make sure we don't have huge influxes of people. So that's managed, but it's good, steady growth. And that happens quite naturally. People coming from all over the world. And again, continues to kind of help the island's culture and identity evolve as we kind of absorb these different elements. In terms of tourism, happily, this we're back to our first proper summer post-COVID. So we get a lot of cruise ships between November and March, which is our summer season. I'm not sure exactly how many we're expecting this year, but a normal year post-COVID, you're looking anywhere between 80 and 90,000 cruise ship passengers just coming in for sort of day visits. So that, you know, doesn't sound like a huge amount for, you know, anywhere else, I guess, but it can be quite impactful, to be honest. So there was a day just a couple of weeks ago where we had about 5,000 cruise ship passengers descend on Stanley in one day. And, you know, when you think the population of Stanley is just over, you know, about 2,500, it was like the town was just completely overwhelmed. But we also see quite a lot of land-based passengers coming in who will fly in for a week or 2 weeks and, you know, spend proper kind of in-depth time out on the smaller islands at the lodges. So tourism's, it's the second, probably joint second sort of strand to our economy. The main bulk of our finance comes from our fishing zone. And then there's agriculture with a lot of sheep farming, and tourism is kind of right up there. Agriculture and tourism kind of, you know, fighting it out at the moment to see who's number two. But it's really important to us. And as well as, you know, the business that it brings into the islands, it's something we really welcome because everybody who gets to see the Falklands understands a little bit more about us and about our reality. And they might hear some crazy nonsense, you know, coming out of the Argentine government, but actually they get to see it for themselves. And we do have quite a lot of Argentine visitors coming over on cruise ships too. And I think that's, you know, that's a good thing because you come and see the truth for yourself, really. But but so it's good. And the main draw, of course, is the wildlife. Absolutely.
Right. I'm just curious, how often do you leave the island personally?
Well, in this role, I'll be away. I was away three times last year. I'll be away three times this year. But generally, I would say most people try to get away maybe every other year because it's expensive. So it's, you know, it costs quite a lot for a family to get to the UK. And then, of course, if you want to go further afield, you know, you tend to sort of save up your holiday and save up your pennies and then go for, instead of going for a week or 2 weeks in the way that most people holiday, we'll probably go for, you know, 4 or 5 weeks and to make the best of that money. So it's funny because it's such a great place to live, but it is very, very small. And so, you know, I always say to people, there's a lot of benefits to being so tiny. The downside is we're a nation of outrageous gossips. There's no two ways about it. Everybody knows everybody's business. So to get away and be a little bit anonymous for a few weeks is actually really, really nice. That and the shopping, because we don't have a lot in the way of shops in Falkland. So it's really good to be able to do that.
And how do you get off and on the island? You said like cruise ships, and I guess you could fly as well, right?
Yeah, so I mean, we can't really travel on the cruise ships. Most of them you have to join somewhere through. A lot of people join in Miami. Others will join in Chile or Argentina or Uruguay as they come down the coast. But so we have a weekly air link with Chile, Santiago in Chile. So that flies in and out every Saturday. And we also have twice a week, we have a flight to the UK that's kind of a charter through the military. So that's really it. We have the three flights a week. And, you know, I mentioned before we'd managed to get this extra link through Sao Paulo in Brazil, which was really positive because that was a midweek flight. But again, you know, Argentina have shut that down, sadly. So there's not a lot of opportunity. It's not easy to get on and off the islands, but but it works for us.
And Leon, I had one last question for you. What is sort of the outlook on the future? Is there any exciting things on the horizon for the Falkland Islands and the people? Or,
well, we have, you know, we're, as I say, we're very ambitious. We have a lot of things that we want to do. I think right at the top of the agenda for this assembly is protection of the environment. So, you know, we're looking really hard at how we protect our wildlife, how looking at climate change, because we can see all the area outside Stanley drying out quite quickly, which is worrying. And, you know, looking to increase our renewables, all those kinds of things. What sounds a little bit weird alongside that is we are also looking at hydrocarbons. We know that there's oil offshore. I think a couple of years ago, we probably thought that the moment for that had passed. But, you know, the war in Ukraine and the, you know, concerns around energy security, I think are very live for everybody. So that is still being looked at as a possibility. The reality is, you know, it will have to be done to the highest environmental and regulatory standards if it's going to happen. So we will see about that. But otherwise, it's just to keep the Falklands growing, to try and get more and more support wherever we can, really, for our self-determination, for people to understand that we are entitled to a voice. So there's always that. And I think really just the future looks pretty bright. We've got, you know, a successful business community here that are, you know, branching out in all sorts of directions. We invest a huge amount in the education of our young people. We see most of our young people coming back, indeed, from, you know, when they've been away for college and university. The vast majority return. So I think it's just to keep trying to do the right thing and, and continue to, I guess, make the Falklands the absolute best that it can be, you know, for all our people, and to play our role in sort of global issues and concerns. You know, we're a very responsible, very tiny but very responsible little player in these issues.
Absolutely. Well, those are all my questions, Leona. It's been eye opening, and definitely one day, hopefully, you want to visit the Falkland Islands. But I really appreciate you taking the time, and it was a wonderful conversation.
Oh, bless you. Thank you so much. And, well, please get in touch if you're ever coming our way. You'll
absolutely
get to
we'll
see
do.
Those penguins in real life.
Oh, I'd love to. That'd be awesome.
All right. Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you so much. Have a good one.
Thank you so much. Take care. Bye-bye.